All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good afternoon. It is July 18th, 2023. Beautiful afternoon here on the East Coast. I hope it is amazing wherever you are at. Just finished a full day's worth of work. My last client canceled for work, so I am done, at least for the day. So I thought I'd come over here and sit down and see if I can share some thoughts, what's going on in my brain. It is Tuesday. Went to a meeting last night. Great meeting. Same meeting I always go to on Monday nights, step meeting. Kind of funny because we were on the 12th step. And if you've ever read the 12th step in a step meeting, usually they break it in half. You know, it's a lot of reading. So, you know, I was like, get a lot of reading tonight. Actually showed up at the meeting and there was somebody that just had come in. So whenever that happens, we always revert back to the first step. And we got into the first step, and it was great. You know, I love it when new people come into the program. A lot of the times it's, I think this person had been in rehab for a little bit and was starting, had come out of rehab and then was jumping into meetings, which I think is always a great idea. You know, I've seen people that, it's interesting, the early path of recovery for people. There's a guy I've watched now, and he just can't seem to quite get it, right? He'd get a little time, and then he'd go back out. Get a little time, go back out. Came into the meeting the other night. I was like, what's the matter? He's like, I drank. I was like, you know. And it's funny because I can get a little attitude, right? Like, what do I care, right? I mean, I am here to get sober, and I'm always shocked when somebody drinks. But the funny thing is we're alcoholics, right? That's what we do. So I have to remind myself, Tom, stop. You know, I almost want to give him like a cold shoulder. Because I tend to try to put a lot of energy, right, into people trying to get sober for the first time. And I try to be there and have conversations and support and, you know, remind them what a great job they're doing and, you know, how much we appreciate the person coming to the program and, you know, doing what they're doing and understanding it is a tough road. And then to see him go back out and drink, you're like, geez. And then I went to the meeting last night. He was not there. Hopefully he's okay. But there was a new person, right? And so, like I said, we revert back to the first step. And, you know, the first step is great. First of all, it's a short read, right? And but one of the things that, hold on. I can't read. I can't reach it. But there's just a lot. It's a short read, but there's a lot of stuff in there. And I was, you know, when I shared, I was like, I can't even really remember really my life back in those days. But when I read the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I was like, was my life that unmanageable? Definitely want no trouble. It is, but it's fun for me to look back. And, you know, the reality was I look at it and my life wasn't that unmanageable, right? You know, March 31st, 1997 is the day, the first time I really tried to get sober. March 30th, 1997, I had no idea I was going to get sober, right? And when I got sober on March 31st, 1997, it wasn't because my life had become unmanageable. It's because I got punched in the face, right? I was embarrassed and I was ashamed. And, you know, but it was enough, right? It was enough to kick me a little bit through the door and to start to learn what this program was about and what my real issues are. But last night I thought, man, was my life unmanageable? And really it wasn't, because, you know, the problem for me at that time was I had no life, right? How can you have an unmanageable life if you don't have a life? And I didn't have a life. You know, I existed and I was a pain in the ass, right? You know, I've said it before, without my parents, I don't know where I would be today, probably in a jail or dead, probably. And, you know, my parents, you know, they saved my ass so many times. And I think as a parent, I get it. But without them, I don't know where I would have ended up. And so at that point in my life, I really had no life. I didn't really have a social life. My day consisted of me coming to, going to a job that I hated, miserable the whole time, up in my head, finally getting off work, usually through the day, going through the regret of the day before or the night before, right? Usually making a lot of promises that I wouldn't repeat it again. And then slowly giving in to that disease. And by the end of the day, thinking, well, I'll just drink beer. And by the end of the night, being deep in a bottle of vodka once again, over and over and over. And, you know, interesting people might come into this world every once in a while. You know, I might find a girl every once in a while, but, you know, I was a mess. You know, nobody wanted to be in a relationship with a guy like me. I wouldn't have wanted to be. And anybody that would, there was still a part of me that was like, God, I don't want to be in this bad of a relationship, right? I mean, you don't want to be lonely, right? But you also regret that you're involved in this mess in the first place. So I had no life, right? I had no life. You know, my life consisted of episodes. And usually it would be, you know, breaking something, crashing something, getting stitches, you know, having to make amends, having to apologize to my parents, having to plead my case, you know, once again, committing to do things that I truly didn't want to do, but I knew that it would get me out of that situation that I was in at that moment, you know, like agreeing to go to meetings. I can remember, you know, I was working at a shortstop, drinking, drugging, and my boss is like, I'm going to fire you. And I was like, oh. He's like, yeah, I think you're in here doing drugs. And he was right. I was drinking and drugging. I had the night shift. And I remember going over to my parents' house and telling them, yeah, I got fired because I was doing drugs in my job. And they're just like, oh, again, right? Again. My parents were the kind of parents that would just rejoice in moments of peace, right? Just me not being in trouble brought them so much happiness. But they knew, just like I knew, that it would eventually come to an end and there would be some sort of incident. And I remember that one and explaining to them, you know, I need to get sober, right? I need to stop doing this. And my dad had somehow heard of a guy, a local guy that lived around here that was sort of a, I don't want to say a guru, but, you know, a regular at a program. And he said, give this guy a call. Maybe he can give you a hand or help you out. And I remember thinking, I do not want to call this guy. But I'd gotten caught again. I'd been caught one more time, right? So I had to make the call, and I did go to a meeting, but I think I got drunk afterwards. I had no desire. And but that was my life, you know? Periods of moments of the big moments, you know, big devastating moments, and then, you know, the moments up to leading to the next big devastating moment. So it was usually just stressing that I'm going to get caught, relief that I got caught, you know, living in, you know, what's ever left from that incident. And then, you know, repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So I had no life. It was terrible. And when I have no life, that means my parents had no life and everybody around me didn't have a life because they are managing me. And like I said in the meeting last night, early recovery, you know, before I got sober, my life wasn't unmanageable. It became unmanageable managing the people that my life had become unmanageable to, like my parents and my uncle and all the other folks. And so, yeah, I thought about it last night. Was my life unmanageable? Not really. The shitstorm that I was living in, I could manage. But to everybody else, it had become unmanageable. So when I got sober in 97, I was, you know, it was like amazing, right? And I did everything I was supposed to do, and I was enjoying it. You know, I was actually going to meetings. I was actually collecting coins. I was actually working with the sponsor, doing the steps. I was not sponsoring. Nobody was asking me to be their sponsor. And that's usually a pretty good sign that I probably wasn't working a great program. In my mind, I thought I was, right? I thought I was doing just fine. I was really confident. I got this. And I was so confident that I was breaking some of the early rules, right? Don't get in relationships in the first year. No big decisions in the first year. Of course, I had to get a girlfriend and go to college. And so, yeah, I was running my own program and then moving to Easton and then finally picking up a drink. The difference is when I came back, right? When I came back, August 26, 2006, I came back. August 26, 2006 was my last drink. But I have changed my sobriety date since then, 2 years later because of pain pills. But that was my last drink. And in that moment, when I came back, I had a life, right? When I got sober in 97, you know, eventually I would get married, right? Four years into it, I got married. We had a child. I had a career. We had a house. I had friends. I had a ton of friends in the program. And my drinking, when I went back out and was struggling again, my life had become unmanageable. And so I've been on both sides of it, right? I've been on the unmanageability when you have no life, and I've been on the unmanageability when you do have a life. And I can tell you, the second one was a lot harder, right? Because the worst part is I'd moved back to the town I'm in now. And so I would, not only was I out struggling to get back into the program, but I was running into all of my sober friends. And that's a nightmare for a person like myself because, of course, we're embarrassed and ashamed and we're sort of ducking and hiding. And it was just unmanageable. And it was really bad. And I'm so grateful today that, you know, I got back in this program and, you know, 14 years later, you know, everything's good, right? You know, I have my challenges. I'm going through some challenges now. You know, we, like everybody, right? We feel the recession. We feel, you know, the cost of living is going up. Everything's going up. You know, I'm having trouble keeping people working at the salon. There was a person that was working there that just basically AWOL'd. I haven't seen this person. I don't know where they're at. I mean, you know, that's income, right? That's revenue that goes towards the survival of the business. And when people drop off, and I think a lot of people are out there having trouble. So, you know, now I'm just sort of full of fear. Do I want to keep the salon? Can I keep the salon? You know, my buddy Matt says, as long as you're sober and not doing drugs, you can do anything you want, right? You can do, you can be available, you can try, you can attempt, right? You can rescue, you can, you know, roll up your sleeves and dig in and get through anything that you want as long as you do not pick up a drink or drug. And I haven't, right? I haven't had a drink or drug. And so I have to keep reminding myself of that. Because if I don't, this disease, this self-centered side of me keeps telling me that I'm going to fail, right? It's not going to make it. We're not going to make it, man. And it's stressful. And the worst part is I know better. And I know exactly what I'm doing, right? I'm not staying in the moment, right? I'm projecting. I've talked about projecting 100 times on this podcast. You know, I do it all the time. I project. I look into the future, which I have no business doing. And I predict. And I think, you know, we're never going to make it. I'm going to have to close down. I'm going to have to file for bankruptcy. It's all this dumb shit that has never happened in my life, right? I've had this salon for 12 years. And I mean, there's been times where I've been working in there by myself, right? Just when I think I can't make it any farther, something happens, right? And it all works out. But it's as long as I'm showing up and participating, right? People like to participate with people that like to participate. And so I'm really having to use a lot of the tools, right, in my tool belt, right? I have to keep reminding myself, stay in the moment, right? You're fine. You're not drinking, you're not drugging, you have tons of opportunity, right? I watched this podcast the other night with Elon Musk, who's obviously the guy that owns Twitter and Tesla, and he was talking about how when he started Tesla, he would work at the factory every day. He was there all day, every day, for weeks on end. He would sleep in his office on the floor, and he made sure that the people during the shift change would walk by his office and they would see him sleeping on the floor. They knew he was there, right? And so you know, I can get through this, right? I can get through this. The other part is the problem is that, and I think a lot of small businesses are dealing with this problem, is that everything has gone up. And you don't, you know, as for a guy, I don't want to raise the prices, right? I have to raise prices to accommodate all the prices that I am having to pay that have gone up. And I don't want to do it, right? And so I'm sort of just kind of suffering because everything's gone up. You know, the price of everything's gone up. Gas, food, rent, everything has gone up. And I did raise my prices sort of back, I think, in 21, maybe 22. But I was like, God, I don't want to raise them any more than that, right? But I'm sort of stuck. I can't continue to do what I'm doing at the price that I'm charging, or I'm just going to, I don't want to, listen, if I don't want to be broke and working and busting my ass, right? I mean, I could easily close down the salon and just go work for somebody and all those problems would go away, right? But I love having my salon. I've had it for 12 years, raised a family. The kids all grew up in that salon. So I don't know. I'm just sort of in a funky spot, sort of, you know, my brain wants to say that I'm sort of in fear, but I'm not really, right? I'm not afraid. I guess what I'm worried about is just inconvenience, right? And that's usually what the problem ends up being. The problem for me is inconvenience. If I have to leave the salon, it's going to be an inconvenience, right? I'm going to have to notify all my clients. I'm going to have to find a new spot. It's a pain in the ass. So, but I don't want to give up, right? I don't want to give up. And I have to keep reminding myself, man, you're not drinking, you're not drugging, you can take this on. And then I have to try to figure out, how can I make this interesting? How can I turn this into something fun, right? How can I turn this into something positive? And that sort of falls back to what I was just talking about. Like, how, maybe you can work more, right? My schedule's pretty lean right now. I was taking Mondays and Wednesday off because I was doing podcasting. There's room to work more, Tom. Definitely room to work more. So I've been taking some clients in on Mondays and just trying to, because, and the other thing is that I am so freaking busy. I mean, I am so busy. I'm slammed. I think my first opening for a color is like September, right? The whole month of August is already booked up. That's the other thing. If I was looking at my schedule and I didn't have any clients and I had these things that were, you know, looming on the horizon, that'd be one thing. But I'm busy, right? I'm doing work. I'm pushing through clients. I'm doing a lot of, I mean, taking on new clients. You know, the person that seems to have not come back, all of her clients are like, can you do my hair? So I'm actually taking on more clients. So I just need to fucking pull my head out of my ass, right? This is just self-centered bullshit. This is like lower power stuff. This is when you let go of the hand of God and you start to live in fear and you start to live in the past and you start to live in the future and you're not living in the present. And that's exactly what's been going on with me. So I'm actively working on it, right? This has been looming. The person that sort of has gone AWOL has been flirting with AWOL for a while. So I was almost predicting, you know, when is it? When's the month that she's just not going to show up? And it sort of happened. And then, of course, she, you know, doesn't matter. But we'll get through it. We will get through it. So it was great to go to the meeting last night. Like I said, I did go to a meeting the other night. I started this podcast a couple times and didn't finish, so I don't remember what I've talked about. But I did do, I was asked to speak on the 16th, Sunday the 16th. So 2 days ago, I spoke at a meeting for somebody, a friend of mine, Jim, and it was great. You know, if you've ever gotten to speak, I think speaking is an absolute honor, right? I think it's absolutely an honor. So, but if you ever get that opportunity immediately, right, I start to, you know, oh boy, am I going to do good, right? Am I going to save the room, right? Early on in my recovery, I remember I was always afraid to share because I thought that I had to say something that was so profound that everybody would be like, oh my God, that was it, man. You just opened the door, right? And so, but that's that lower power bullshit going on in my head. And so that started to The worst part is he asked me a few days ago, like a couple weeks ago, really. So I've sort of been thinking about it, right? But still telling myself, don't think about it. The reality is all you need to do is talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Everything out of that is just, you know, frosting on the cake. And so I would start to kind of get up in my head and start to think about what I'm going to say. And then I'd be like, nah, I'm not going to do that. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And my buddy Matt used to always, you know, he used to do a lot of sharing, and he'd be like, I loved it when I just got to the thing and I was introduced and I had no idea what I was going to say and then just spoke. Because, you know, that's really from the heart, right? I was at a meeting not that long ago and a guy brought out a piece of paper, right? Notes. And I get it, right? I understand you want to have your thoughts right there on a piece of paper. But to me, that's sort of serving self, right? That's sort of, you know, that's not letting me be me. That's trying to have me be somebody else. And at this point in my life and at this point in my recovery, this is it. This is the best I can do, right? And so if I screw up, it at least allows people to see, hey, you can go up and share and screw up and be fine, right? Because in my mind, everybody's going to think I'm terrible, right? But the reality is, and from a guy that's sat and watched many speakers, anytime someone, the only thing that ever bugs me about when someone speaks is if they speak too long, right? I've seen a guy speak for 40 minutes. I mean, that is brutal. You know, as long as it's a decent amount of decent time. But regardless, any person I've ever seen share, even the one that speaks a lot, I always have to go up and say, great job, right? You did a great job. It's a tough gig. So I got to do that, and it was cool because, you know, and then, of course, it's, you know, what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. So, of course, I'm thinking, what was it like, right? And usually when that happens, when I do speak, I usually like to talk about what it was like is what it was like when I got sober in 97, that first 5 years. And because, honestly, everything before that is just the same as everybody else. I drank too much. I got caught at it too much. I was an asshole. I was despicable. I needed to make a change in my life. I don't need to discuss that. What I like to talk about is what it was like when I got sober in 1997. And then what happened, right? And what happened was that I realized that I came into this program as a victim of alcoholism. And anytime a person is a victim like I was, I didn't look at the program from the correct perspective. Right, I looked at it as I was sent here. This is what I get. You know, I'll do the best I can. I'll do what I can, because you know it's like getting sent to camp, right, or getting sent to jail, right? You don't bathe in it, right? You just do whatever you got to do to get through it, and that's sort of how I was, and that's sort of what it was like, right? I just kind of got through it, and it didn't take much. And so what happened was, you know, I moved and I went to that meeting and I didn't like the way they collected the money. And that was about it. It just was that quick. And next thing you know, this voice is like, you've done so good. You can have a drink. And I did, and I was hiding bottles. And so that's what happened. And so what it's like now is a whole different world for me, right? Because today, this is a gift. And, you know, we have been, for whatever reason, given a disease, a fatal disease, right? And there is a cure, and it's called this program. I remember a guy said, listen, if I told you that you had cancer, you know, and I shared this in the meeting, and if I shared it on here, I'm sorry, but because somebody told me this a long time ago, which I thought was really a good point, was, you know, if you came to me and said, I've been diagnosed with cancer, and I said, oh, my God, that's terrible, but hey, there is a cure, and be like, what is it? I'll do anything. And why don't you walk backwards up Route 1 all the way to Dover, rubbing your belly, and if you can do that, you will be cured of cancer. If that was the case, Route 1 would be full of fucking tons of people walking backwards all the way to Dover because they would do anything to cure themselves of that cancer. But when it comes to this fatal disease, alcoholism and drug addiction, we've been given a cure. All you got to do is work these 12 steps, work with another alcoholic, go to meetings and be there for the next alcoholic, and you too can be cured. You don't even have to walk. It's too much for some people, right? Because I guess we just don't take it seriously, right? And So, yeah, the meeting anyway, I went to the meeting and spoke, and it was cool because I didn't have to do the what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What I got to do was it turned out to be a promises meeting. And the promise that I talked about was, of course, my favorite promise, number 11, intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. And to me, this promise coming true is the reality is this is of me finally becoming accountable for my actions and everything that I've done. Everything I've ever done, I had a choice not to do, right? So every problem, every positive or negative thing that's ever happened to me in my life, I probably played a role in it. But I didn't feel that way when I came in the first time, right? I came in as sort of a victim of alcoholism. I got punched, and then I had to go to the hospital, and then I did an outpatient program, which is all good. I appreciate all that. But it's just like this victim-y, And today I'm like, I got a fatal disease. And I'm, you know, and I know what the cure is, and I'm here to work on it, and it makes my life better. It absolutely makes my life better. And for that, I am grateful. Hold on, Let me grab a... Let me see if I can do a daily reflection. Da-da-da. Without losing my shit here. There we go. Daily reflection. So, yeah, to sort of wrap all that up, it's just been sort of a rough few days, rough week. A lot of in my head stuff and a lot of fear and anxiety. And hopefully sharing about it on this podcast will make it a little better. I just have to show up and keep doing hard work, right? And don't pick up a drink or a drug. Should work out. Like my buddy Matt, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, bro, it'll all work out. And I'm not doing either one of those, so wish me luck. All right, grateful for what I have. Mm-hmm. July 18th. During the process of learning more about humility, the most profound results of all was the change in our attitude towards God. That is true. That is true. Because humility is God. For me, humility is a path to a higher power, right? Self is the opposite of humility. Self is a path to a lower power, or to that devil talk, for me. All right, so that was 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 75. Today, my prayers consist mostly of saying thank you to my higher power for my sobriety and for the wonder of God's abundance. But I need to ask also for help and the power to carry out his will for me. I no longer need God each minute to rescue me from the situations I get myself into. What the hell? Sorry. Rescue me from the situations I get myself into, not doing his will. Now my gratitude seems to be directly linked to humility. As long as I have the humility to be grateful for what I have, God continues to provide for me. Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I spend time being grateful for what I have and not boo-hooing about what I don't have, right? And that's fucking exactly what I've been doing. I've been boo-hooing about what I do not have and not taking the time to realize what I do have. And that's pretty awesome. Attitude of gratitude. Maybe I need a gratitude list, right? Because I am surrounded by all sorts of wonderful gifts that I've gotten from this from being sober and working this program. And for that, I have to remember. And so, yeah, that's what I'm going through. Has the recession got you? Man. The other thing is we're poor. my wife doesn't work. We're a one-income family. We are paycheck to paycheck. And part of that is uncomfortable, to be honest with you. Part of that is pretty cool. Later. Oh, pack it up.
my soul. All the things that I don't know. Break.